Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 71. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
And Josh, what should we say about Josh this week?
Mary Elizabeth Winstead joke.
Okay, yes. There we go.
Insert Mary Elizabeth Winstead joke here.
All right, that works. Unable to join us. He will be back soon, we're hoping. Anyhow, let's talk about what we watched this week. Did you watch much of anything at all, Barry?
I did. I got caught up on some of the cool DVDs that came out this past month. I managed to, from my local library, get a copy of Tales from the Dark Side Season 1.
Nice. Does it hold up?
I think so. Yeah, some of the episodes are terrible. Some of them are really, really terrific and real nice surprises. The one thing that everybody's been complaining about online, the online community who are diehard fans of the series, have been saying that they're upset that the music has been changed.
Oh, they changed.
Apparently, they changed the music. But you know what? I can't tell the difference because, you know, this is 80s keyboard theme music, and they replaced it with more 80s like theme keyboard music. So I can't really tell the difference.
Even more generic.
Yeah, for me, it feels as cheesy as it always did, which for me was the charm of the show. So for me, there's no love lost at all.
So it's not like Quantum Leap or the reason why the Wonder Years hasn't come out is because of music rights. WKRP in Cincinnati changed all the music.
Yeah,
so it's not that big of a deal.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't want to bother Wonder Years and have like Joe Cocker replaced by Lady Gaga. Yeah, you don't want to have that crap. So I didn't experience any of that problem wise with Tales from the Dark Side. I enjoyed it. You know, it's still the show. Is so hit and miss, but the best episodes are terrific. I also got the Howard the Duck DVD again, barred. I did not purchase this DVD, but the extras are fantastic. Leah Thompson, still adorable. The director, everybody's like, you know, reminiscing about the film. The only one who's not there is Tim Robbins and George Lucas, of course.
I was gonna ask if the flannel Jedi shows up.
You only see him in archived footage from '86 on the set of the movie. Talking about the film. That's it. That is the only footage. They talk about him, but that's the only time you see him. Same with Tim Robbins. It's like Tim Robbins went on to bigger and better things. Obviously, not even the commentary for the movie. But yeah, otherwise, it was a very enjoyable DVD. The extras are terrific. Get some great behind the scenes stuff, and yeah, it's fun to. It's fun. The director who made the movie is so nice. You almost like want to let him a little off the hook for making such a terrible movie because he seems like such a sweet guy. It's like, aw, your movie wasn't that bad, Willard. Even though his film is, you know, it's dreadful, but. Yeah, it's a great buy, definitely, for like, I think Best Buy had it for like $9.99. That's a really good price for that movie.
So are you going to get this at some point?
I think so. Yeah, it's really, even though I've seen the movie so many times, at this point I think I'd be buying it strictly for the extras, because the film, like, it's one of those movies I could almost recite, because I've seen so many times.
I'm sorry.
I actually nearly bought it a few days ago.
Well, but you know,
what stopped you?
Yeah, well, yeah. I'd say do it. It's a good buy.
Common sense.
Well played.
I got to tell you this really quick. You know, remember the opening scene of the movie that takes place in Duck World? Well, the nice thing about DVD is that, you know, you can like pause and go zoom and like really look at the details because many jokes in that opening scene. So I really wanted like to take a close look at all the, like the little in-jokes, you know, and all the little Star Wars, you know, all the duck pun jokes. Well, here's the weird thing. In Howard's fridge, he's got fried chicken in there. Doesn't that strike you as cannibalistic?
A little bit.
Seriously. I'm like, no. And I pause and I go for a close-up. Yeah, he's got like a little box of Turner's fried chicken in there.
Man, this is like Watchmen. It's got so many like background.
So many layers.
At least it wasn't you were stopping to pause for a certain scene that's infamous.
No.
You've seen enough duck boobs.
Duck boobs was exciting when I was like 9. Not so much when I'm 32. No.
Fair enough. All right. Is that wrap up your week, sir?
I guess the one more thing I should mention, just because it was so ridiculous. I mean, this is a weird week for DVDs for me. I saw Lloyd Kaufman's Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead.
You did?
It did. It's so relentlessly disgusting, so unbelievably disgusting that I had a hard time like appreciating the really witty and funny stuff that is there, because it's got some funny stuff in there. It really does. But in the opening scene, like a guy has his underwear pulled. Let's see. Like the zombie, his fist goes through the guy's mouth. Pulls his underwear through his crack and out through his mouth. That's like one of the opening scenes in the movie. In fact, that is the opening of the movie. And it sets the movie off to such a disgusting mark. Like the whole thing was like that for me. Like whenever I'm like, oh, that's great. That's a clever slam against Starbucks or whatever. But then like, there'll be moments like explosive diarrhea or like exploding anuses. You know, there's so many moments like that where it's like, you know, it felt excessive even for trauma. So I'm kind of on the fence about Poultry Guys, because there is great, really funny stuff in there. You know, the other thing that sucks about it is it's a musical, And it really shouldn't be. Because this isn't like Trey Parker, Matt Stone, when they did, you know, Cannibal the Musical for Trauma, which is terrific. The music in Poltergeist is bad, and the songs are bad, the musical numbers are bad. Although, where else can you see Lloyd Kaufman in a dress, like, packing heat and, like, shooting zombies with a machine gun? So, well, you know, there's an audience for this movie, clearly.
Well, is it as good as Repo?
Oh, so much better than Repo. I would rather watch Poltergeist on a loop than ever watch Repo again.
Dang.
Yeah, I really hated Repo. And for me, like Poltergeist has enough funny moments that it's worth seeing again. For me, Repo just didn't, just once was enough.
Yeah, yeah. Ethan, what about you, sir?
Oh, yeah, I watched a bunch of stuff. I watched Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Cool. Did you watch the director's cut or the regular cut?
Whatever was in iTunes, but...
Okay. What'd you think?
Well, I appreciated it, like how it really did try to be like 2001 a lot, yeah. But I found there to be a real like kind of lack of tension throughout the movie.
Sure.
So I didn't really find it very enjoyable, but yeah, I appreciated it, and it was interesting, and it was just good seeing the characters as always.
Isn't it great when Bones shows up and it looks like one of the Bee Gees?
Yeah, he's got the beard and everything.
Yeah, he's got the beard. And he's got the chest hair. It's great.
Where's the disco?
Yeah, did you like Star Trek 1, Dave? Okay, I liked it.
The original cut bored me to tears.
Yes, yes.
But the director's cut actually, and the weird thing is, the movie was way too long, the theatrical cut. Director's cut's longer, but it made its time count more, I guess is the best way to put it.
I totally agree with you, yeah.
Still not my favorite by a long shot, but it made me appreciate the movie more, that's for sure. And I think that's what they show on iTunes. Because if you hadn't watched the director's cut, Ethan, I'm guessing you would have fallen asleep before telling us what you thought about the movie.
Okay, I also watched, a movie I wrote a review for on the site, Dragon Ball Evolution.
Yeah.
And
great review, by the way.
Yeah, you know what? I've already, like, forgotten most of what happened in this movie.
Now, this is the live-action flick?
We have much to say.
This is the live-action flick, Ethan?
Yeah.
How did I miss this?
Yeah, it's, I think if you contact the studio, they'll set up a special screening for you.
Fair enough. Oh, that's just too much work to go through, though. All right, there it is. Oh, wow. Yeah, nice. A 0 out of 10. Well done, sir. All right, I'm going to have to read this a little bit later. Sweet. Okay, so moving on.
I also finally watched Futurama Into the Wild Green Yonder.
What'd you think?
It was funny. You know, I liked it better than a few of the other of the movies, but, you know,
I thought it was pretty bad.
Really?
Yeah. Like,
how come?
Like not Beast with a Billion Backs bad, but I really think that the Futurama crew needs to stick to half-hour episodes, like do the entire story in a half hour.
I agree. Well, I watched it in intervals, so I kind of, I guess.
Gotcha. Like Bender's Game, I loved. Even though it's two separate stories, I still had a great time with it. It's a lot of fun. It had that Futurama feeling to it. But Into the Wild Green Yonder, I'm trying to remember it, really, to be honest. Well, I was just that unimpressed.
Didn't you at least like Zap Brannigan singing Hungry Like the Wolf?
Okay, yes, I did.
That's awesome.
I'm not going to say that there wasn't funny stuff in there, but it wasn't. It's not up to Futurama standards, I don't think.
Yeah, okay. Well, I got a few more. I watched both Tales of the Black Freighter and Under the Hood.
How are they?
Tales of the Black Freighter, it's pretty well done. It's very creepy, I found, and cool. But, like, again... It I don't see it working in the movie at all, in no way.
Completely unnecessary, or it's just not going to work trying to translate? That's just one part of the translation that's just not going to work.
Yeah, it won't flow well into the movie. Okay. Yeah. But Under the Hood, pretty cool, I thought.
Okay, I've seen some of the promotional pictures from it and stuff, and it looks pretty interesting.
Cool.
Yeah. And finally, last thing I watched was also Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Got a tricky role.
Yeah, I'd seen it before, but like I think like 4 or 5 years ago. But yeah, this time it was really amazing, I thought. I think it's just as good as Empire Strikes Back, to be honest.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the one that really kind of gave Star Trek its real credibility. Even, I mean, I know people are going to say, I love Star Trek no matter what. But Star Trek II really made it a credible source of science fiction, just because the level of storytelling.
Yeah, no, you're right. Because as much as we can both like bend over backwards talking about the first one, and the first one was a huge hit. People were kind of on the fence about it, kind of indifferent about it. They kind of met it with a shrug when it came out. But Star Trek II, that's the one that really, really brought people back to the series. The, you know, the movie was received so enthusiastically, and then all of a sudden there was like all these other sequels. Yeah, yeah, it's a great film. Ricardo Montalban is awesome as Khan. He is so awesome. His chest plate is a little phony, but I don't mind because it's Star Trek. I'm willing to go with it.
If that's the worst shape to put, yes. I was just thinking, I wish I'd pulled that from Futurama.
Curses. That's a good sound.
All good. Yeah, I need to pull a lot of stuff. Is that it for you, sir?
Yeah, that's all.
I'm trying to think what I watched. I started watching the Britcom, The It Crowd. IT is in about a bunch of tech nerds. And, you know, there's something about a British laugh track that just turns me off to a show. On top of that, the jokes weren't that funny, really. Like, they threw a lot of geek stuff in there, which was kind of cool. But have you either of you guys watched the entire series of Extras?
Not the entire series, no.
I have.
It kind of reminded me of the sitcom that Andy does.
Are you having a laugh? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of reminded me of that, like in that kind of painful way. I just, I gave it about 4 or 5 episodes and I'm done.
Any names in it we know?
No, not at all. Not at all whatsoever. I just, no, I'm good.
Is it a creative team someone we know? Or
No. I just heard good things. I'm like, yeah, I'll check it out. And then regretted that decision rather quickly.
That's too bad.
Finished Battlestar Galactica. Season 3. So I'm a bit behind still, but that's still a really good show. If you haven't seen it, well worth checking out. We watched Razor and we're starting season 4 tonight. So cool. Yeah, hopefully we'll be caught up soon. I think that's it. I didn't watch any movies except for our main topic. So why don't we go ahead and talk about what's hitting theaters this week? What hit theaters this week, I should say.
What hit theaters? Well, one of them was a hit. The other not so much, and one really, really underplayed. The number one movie in America currently is Alec Proyas' Knowing, starring Nicolas Cage, which I have heard everything about. Like, on one hand, there's Roger Ebert. Did you see that review? He gave it 4 stars, said one of the best science fiction movies I've ever seen.
Ooh.
I mean, can he possibly live up? Because that's what he said about Proyas' Dark City, too.
And
so
I adore Dark City.
Yeah, Dark City is great, so I'm really curious. But everybody else is saying that Knowing is like it's overdone. Nicolas Cage is like bad-eyed crazy the whole movie. It's really silly. So I'm very curious.
So he's playing Dr. Fu Manchu.
I would pay to see that.
At this point, we could just say that Nicolas Cage is being Nicolas Cage.
Which is a shame because that was not the case just a few years ago. But like post Ghost Rider and
Champagne Jelly Beans,
Wicker Man. Yeah, it's like, yeah, because he did Adaptation in Matchstick Man just a few years ago, and now he's going back to this.
I take it back. I watched something else. I watched Synecdoche, New York.
Oh, what'd you think?
Holy crap, was that a crazy good movie?
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Did you like it or not really so much?
I really appreciated and admired it. Yeah. Philip Seymour Hoffman's character is not someone you feel sorry for even a little bit, really. But then you realize that's not even the point of the movie. Yeah. So it's a very artsy-fartsy movie, to quote some relatives. I mean, this is one for the adventurous moviegoer, but I think it pays off if you're willing to give it a shot.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was cool how it's like, how he's watching an actor playing him, and then there's an actor watching the actor playing him as the actor playing him. I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah,
this cyclical thing.
And if that just broke your brain, don't watch this movie.
I found a lot of symbolism in the movie that I just don't even want to comprehend. I just prefer to remain kind of.
You just
crazy.
Appreciate it for it sitting there, and you enjoy it, and move on.
Everybody's making such a big deal about the Watchmen wiener. You know what really disturbed me was seeing Philip Seymour Hoffman's poo in
the
Synecdoche.
Gray.
Yeah,
the
I thought that was very. I found that more disturbing than any male nudity. just felt like confessing that.
So let me ask you a quick question about before we move on.
Yeah,
there's a scene with Olive.
Yeah,
talking through the translator, and he confesses to something.
Yes,
did he make that up?
Oh, did the character make that up?
Yes. Because there's no reference to it in the rest of the stinking movie.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Well, it's as random as anything else in the movie.
That's kind of what I chalked it up to. But I just thought I'd get an extra idea there.
Yeah.
Wait, is this the stripper scene or
the one in the hospital where they have to talk through the translator box?
Scene. Yeah.
And he admits to something and.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
I assume he made it up.
Okay.
Because it seems like his lust for everything else was kind of overwhelming, but
yeah just I mean I don't care one way or another, it's just it didn't seem backed up by anything else in the rest of the movie, so that kind of
Did you at one point, let me throw this at you because this really blew my mind. Were you, like, I guess Coppin was playing on the idea that Emily Mortimer and Samantha Morton look a lot like each other and they get confused with each other. Did you not realize that they were playing two different people at one point? Like, at one point, like, they start playing each other's character, and I didn't realize it was two different actresses. Like, Kaufman got me. I didn't realize it was two different actresses playing the role.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yeah, I mean, just,
totally.
Anyway, yeah.
Really good, though.
Really, I mean, hurt my brain, too. Yeah, I love that film.
If you're willing to give your brain a good workout, it's worth checking out. So, okay, move on.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, so Knowing, number one movie in America. Number two was I Love You, Man, with Paul Rudd and Jason Segel. I've heard it's terrific. I'm looking forward to seeing that. And then finally, Duplicity, which did not open very well. In fact, you could even say this is like the Leatherheads of this year. Julia Roberts and Clive Owen, star power, good reviews, but yeah, didn't do so well. And finally, a film I really love. I hope people give this movie a shot. It just shows that not every movie out there has to have jokes about, you know, dicks and guy stuff. Movies can be clean. They can be PG rated. They can be funny. And they can be comedies. The Great Buck Howard, currently playing on 47 screens.
Yeah. Did it drop to 47? Because it was 50 last week,
okay.
And I checked earlier this week, and it was 49.
Okay, and this is what you gave me from last week, okay. So it's updated. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. But guys, if you want dick jokes, come to Screen Geeks.
Apparently, I don't.
Well, we try to mix it up. That's why we do. You know, we're talking about Preston Sturges. You know, and then we'll talk about Watchmen Wiener for a while. Then we'll talk about Bergman, and they'll go back to the Watchmen Wiener. You know, we go back and forth. We're trying to like reach out.
Or Kaufman Poo.
That's right, Kaufman Poo. That's a great name for a band. Kaufman Poo.
Yeah. Wow.
You heard it here first.
All right. What's hitting DVD this week, sir?
DVD. What do we got? Quantum of Solace in the 1 and 2 disc special edition.
Which we didn't really talk about much last week.
Yeah. Yeah. Should we talk about Quantum?
I guess.
I didn't care for it. I thought the action scenes were great, but for me, the movie peaked like in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah. The problem is that James Bond movies aren't known for character development, shall we say? Except for Casino Royale.
Casino Royale and On Her Majesty's Secret Service, yeah.
And I was expecting some actual character development.
Sure, especially because the last one set the bar pretty high, too.
Yeah, and this, just the girl was so annoying.
Well, she's a Bond girl. She just wasn't an actress.
Yeah, but she's annoying for a Bond girl. I mean, granted, my favorite's Michelle Yeoh, but she can actually act and kick butt, so.
Right.
Yeah. I was so thoroughly unimpressed with this movie.
The villain wasn't all that impressive. It was really nasty, too. I didn't think it was fun. I thought it was kind of an ugly movie. I mean, you got the...
My big problem was that I couldn't follow the plot, really.
Mm.
There was a plot?
Oh!
It was so convoluted. Like, it was a new story plus all the events of the last movie.
But they never really got around to answering a freaking thing.
Yeah. Did you like Bond in this movie? I thought he was kind of a bully.
Kind of an ass, yeah.
yeah. Like for me, like the mean gritty Bond, like the novelty of that kind of wore off after one movie.
Well, here's the thing: the last movie set up Bond as how he becomes the womanizer he is in many ways.
Yeah.
And I expected them to continue that, explaining how Bond becomes Bond. This is the evolution of the character. You're rebooting the character.
Yeah.
There was none of that in this movie.
Yeah.
Thus, why I asked last week if there's a half disc edition.
And what was it, like 90 minutes?
Something like that. Yeah, it's like the way shorter.
It's the shortest Bond movie, apparently.
Because the last one was like 2.5 hours,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, last one was like almost 3.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was so exciting, and it moved so much. And
you wanted more, and then you get more with this, and you wish you didn't. You kind of wish you could throw it back up. Okay.
Also, by the way, one of the worst titles. I mean, come on. That's a terrible title. Quantum of Solace. Months later, it still doesn't sound good. I'm sure they were thinking like, oh, it's going to be huge. Doesn't matter what they call it, but yeah. Kaufman Poo would have been a better title. It's available in the 1 and 2 disc special edition. Also in a 2 disc, I love this movie, Bolt. Great movie.
And I will be picking it up. I watched a little bit of it, and yeah, I want to. Yeah, we're going to get it.
Excellent, yeah. Curious to see what you think about it when you finish it. Watchmen, we talked about this. Watchmen, Tales of the Black Freighter, and Under the Hood in 1 disc. So what do you think, Ethan? Should I wait to see the movie again and then watch it, or is it good as a separate entity?
I think it works on its own, to be honest.
Yeah.
Does it work better on its own?
Yeah. Like, again, like I said before, I just don't see it working in the movie at all.
It would be kind of weird to see, like, the owl ship orgasm scene, like, and all of a sudden Gerard Butler as the pirate. I can't imagine that not being very jarring to, like, go back and forth, but I'd be curious to see him try.
Make a scene even worse. Wow.
I do not like that scene. And then To Catch a Thief, one of the great Hitchcock romantic thrillers. Emphasis on romance, though. If you're expecting North by Northwest, forget it. But if you're looking for a good Hitchcock date movie, you really can't do any better than Grace Kelly, fireworks, the music. Yeah, it's...
I'd say Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's a really good choice.
I'd say Psycho, but, you know.
Depends on the kind of date you're on. Yeah,
Topaz, you know, that works great. It's a date movie. Topaz. No, was it Frenzy was about the rapist?
Yes.
That's the one I meant to say. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Not a fan
of that film.
So shall we move on to our news for the week?
Yes.
All right. Ethan, I'll let you kick it off.
Did you guys read about the Bruno footage that screened at South by Southwest?
It sounded pretty sensational, yeah. But I heard about how he has a black son. I heard about that.
Yeah. Calls it a gaby. Oh, God. It's probably like the only footage time where I've actually read like a footage description and actually like laughed out loud while reading it. That sounds wrong.
Of course, it's Bruno, so anything less would be uncivilized.
Well, about a month ago, when they were interviewing, you know, his wife or girlfriend, Isla Fisher, I don't know if she's married to him or not, but she was saying that she'd seen, of course, her husband / boyfriend, whatever's movie, and she said it went much farther than Borat.
Oh.
So, and it certainly sounds like it.
You know, the running of the Jew was just so wrong.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, we'll just see what happens there. Yeah. Wow. So are you hopeful for this, Ethan?
Yeah, I think it's going to be the funniest movie of the year.
Fair enough. Does that come out this year?
Yeah, this summer.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a summer movie.
Okay, we'll see what happens.
You heard about Schwarzenegger, right? How he like? Did you hear about this?
No.
Did you guys hear about this? He went to Arnold Schwarzenegger. Apparently, he found out where Schwarzenegger was going to be, and he like runs up to Schwarzenegger with his camera and accuses him of being a homosexual and needs to come out of the closet. And apparently, it's all in the movie. Yeah. Yeah. So,
I don't even know what to say.
So Schwarzenegger's going to be in two movies this summer. He's going to be Terminator Salvation and Bruno.
All right. To go from one brain-breaking thing to another, apparently the new Transformers movie, Jet fires a pimp because he has a cane.
Or an old man, one of the two.
Yeah.
Does he also have like a hat with a feather or it's just a big old cane?
I don't know. Like they showed a picture of the toy and he has a cane.
Oh, man.
He's a retired Autobot. He's old and parts fall off him. And
that is so silly.
He's a retired Autobot SR-71. Yeah.
Is like Larry the Cable Guy doing the voice or?
No.
Do we know who it is?
Yeah, John Turturro.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that right? Did I read that? Do I remember that right? Did you read that, Ethan?
Yeah, the Chud article, it said that. So.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought.
Man, that is so silly.
I did that just for you because I know you're looking forward to the sequel.
Oh, so much, so much. Yeah, I'm like the only geek in America who really, really didn't like the first one. I'm really not caring about the sequel.
Do you want to keep the Transformers news rolling there, Ethan?
Yeah, okay. Two stories here also related to that. Transformers 3, well, it got a release date by the studio Paramount of July 1st, 2011, I believe. But then Michael Bay was just like a few days later was like, no, I'm not doing that. So I just find it so hilarious that they set this release date without like consulting anybody. Just like give them, you know, a weekend, a six pack of beer and some pizza and they'll knock out a movie.
Yeah. Well, it's more like Bay's reactions were like, are you out of your effing mind? Which I don't know. I mean, to think about it, I mean, there isn't a lot of plot behind these Transformers movies, but
they're hard to make. Clearly.
Yeah. 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 So essentially Bay coming back and saying you're not the boss of me.
I wonder if he wants to branch out and do something different because you know,
GoBots, like,
Snorks would be, you know, be interesting because like, you know, these guys like Burton, after he did the first Batman, he needed a break and he did Edward Scissorhands, you know, and it's like it seems like whenever they have like these big franchise movies, Christopher Nolan, you know, they want to like take a break. So you know, maybe Bay wants to go and do like Bad Boys 3, get that out of his system, then go back to Transformers.
Because he can't do enough explosions in Transformers? It holds him back?
Yeah, it's stifling his artistic creativity.
Well, like I think Alan Moore said this, that one day we'll see a Captain Crunch movie produced by Jerry Bruckheimer starring Johnny Depp. I think he could do that.
I'm just imagining Depp in that hat and with the white mustache. Yeah, I can see that.
Ow.
It's like high concept Hollywood hell right there.
Yeah, Bay's little passion project is.
All right, get to the real news, sir.
Do you remember when the captain was kidnapped? Do you guys remember that? And it ended up he was on Mount Crunchmore because the Soggies had kidnapped him. Do you guys remember that?
Vaguely, yeah.
It was like this big campaign. It was like, where's the captain?
Yeah, like to some of the can some of the cereal like was missing part of it. And,
right. Yeah.
Oh gosh, that just hurt.
Sorry,
you're bringing back.
Wow. I'll shut up now. Sorry.
It's funny. We think so fondly about our childhood, and we think about these really crappy things like this. Like, why did we ever think this was cool? It's like when you see kids dressing up in 80s. Like, the 80s were cool. You're like, no, yeah. I was there.
Foot warmers are back. I saw them in a store the other day. Foot warmers. Like, freaking Jennifer Beals Flashdance foot warmers are back. God. Yeah.
Okay. I
That's the only news article I have.
That just belongs there, dang it. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right, get to the real Transformers news, sir.
Da, 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 da. You got the touch. Wow, 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 wow. You got the power. Wow, wow, wow. After all is
okay,
said.
Okay, dude.
It's
okay. Dude, you're hurting me here. You're killing me,
Smalls. Awesome, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
That was so cool. Okay. Third grade just came right back for me.
Anyway, Stan Bush has tried to put a new version of the touch in Transformers 2. Though I think didn't he try to do it for the first one also?
I think there's a lot of talk about doing it, and I will be honest, I was one of those people who's like, I will like Transformers more if they put this song in there. But the more I think about it, the more I realize I avoid watching the original movie because of that song.
For me, there is only one Transformers movie, and it is still that movie. So I would love the inclusion of that song. For me, that would give it more. It would give Bay's movie more legitimacy, for what it's worth.
What if they put Weird Al back in?
That would be awesome. If the GoBots, okay. if the Transformers are getting down to Dare to Be Stupid, that'd be so cool. I would so be there. Seriously, I mean, come on, the robot with a crutch and John Turturro's voice—that sounds like what this movie's heading towards.
That's true.
Next thing you know, there's gonna be nipples on. And yeah, there's gonna be like nipples on the Transformer suit.
I mean, RC. Yeah. Sorry.
Seriously.
People making jokes about RC's headlights. Okay, I don't know why I went there. My apologies. Okay. Wow. So what do you think about this news, Ethan?
I still enjoy that song, so it'd be cool to hear it.
I do too, only when no one else is around, though. It's just me.
In the shower.
Yeah, in the shower. Like, Julia's not around. I'll, like, download the video from, like, YouTube and just rock out. And then pretend I've been, like, grading tests the whole time. Yeah.
Okay.
I think we better move on.
Yeah, sorry, I think so. Sorry. I think so. Apparently... we may be closing in on our Hal Jordan for the Green Lantern movie. There's buzz around that Chris Pine might be taking that particular role, which actually, you know, you see the look. If you think about who Captain Kirk is, put aside the Shatner acting, the playboy, very much it is compatible with Hal Jordan. So if we get non-Shatner acting, this could actually work quite well.
I don't see him accepting this, to be honest.
I could see that too, because it could shoehorn him into doing sci-fi for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
One thing's for sure. I mean, if they get him to do this, they need to get him for this thing now, because if he's as good as they say he is in Star Trek, he's going to be very expensive after Star Trek. They'd be smart to get him now and pay him $200,000 as opposed to like $2-3 million, which is probably going to be his asking price after Trek, if he's as good as they say he is.
And I think they're waiting to see what kind of reception he gets from the movie. Because critics are one thing, but if he becomes a box office, you know, commodity, then yeah, I could see him trying to get him.
Yeah,
but I could also see Ethan's side of things where it's like, yeah, he may not want to go that route.
Yeah, maybe he wants to, like, you know, go back to indie films. Yeah, you never know.
And considering that Warner Brothers wants to get this filming by September, I think they're gonna, yeah, I hope they have some backups just in case.
Wasn't he the male lead in that Lindsay Lohan pick, Just My Luck?
I think he was.
Yeah.
I didn't watch that movie.
I didn't see it either. No more confessions from me today. I didn't see that movie. I'm just saying, I think, yeah. So, yeah, I'd like to. I hope his career takes off regardless. I do. If he's a great actor, I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. All right, Ethan, back to you, sir.
Okay. The David Gordon Green directed Danny McBride starring Your Highness has been greenlit, and this is a fantasy comedy, also kind of a stoner comedy. Also, James Franco recently joined the cast, so I'm excited to see this. They said there's going to be a scene where Danny McBride battles a minotaur, so...
Oh, wow.
Are they actually going to kill a unicorn?
Well, they said this is going to be like in the spirit of, like, Krull, so...
Oh, man, that's great.
Wow. Okay, yeah, that could be interesting. I might give it a chance.
Well, you know, it almost sounds like it would be in the same genre as Year One. So I wonder if, you know, if Year One tanks, which we'll talk about in a second, but if it tanks, I wonder if people will still want to see this movie.
We might as well just get to it. Did anyone see the Year One trailer?
Yeah, I was very disappointed.
Yeah. What do you think, Ethan? I want to get your take on this.
I think it'll be a funny movie, but I was kind of on the trailer.
I thought the trailer pretty much sucked out loud.
For me, it's been kind of a thing with like Harold Ramis movies. Either they really, really hit or they're just kind of really one joke, unfunny comedies. You know, this goes back to like Evolution and Analyze That. I mean, like, you know, his last few movies have been really underwhelming. So I wonder if this is going to be like one of those also-ran summer movies. Like, you know, when Funny People sold out, you go see Year One.
Perhaps.
Or, yeah, just for the air conditioning.
Well, you know, I will say, though, Year One looks like a Best Picture contender compared to the Sorority Row trailer.
Yeah, that's the one with Rumor Willis, right?
Whoever it is. I don't even... Like, when you're rooting in the trailer already for everybody to die, I'm guessing that's not quite the vibe that we're going for.
It looks dreadful. It really does.
Like, did it makes I Know What You Did Last Summer look good.
Yeah, speaking of which, did you see the Orphan trailer?
No.
That's it's weird. It's Vera Farmiga, you know, who was also in, you know, The Departed. It's another evil kid movie. And she was in that movie Joshua a couple years ago about an evil kid. And this is another evil kid movie. They adopt this little girl, and apparently, like, she's the Antichrist. It's, and who's the guy? And I can't remember who the lead is, but it looks terrible.
Oh, Sarsgaard, right?
Yes, Stalin. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really?
Peter Sarsgaard, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks dreadful. Just dreadful bad.
Oh, okay. Vera Farmiga is really hot, so...
She is. She's gorgeous. I just wish she wouldn't keep doing these Omen ripoffs.
And that's one way to put it. All right.
Yeah.
I'll do one more bit of news and kick it back to Ethan. And that Slash Film put up a one-minute clip of Up, and it looks kind of fun. You really don't see a heck of a lot, but, you know, during the quote-unquote monotonous scenes, if it still looks entertaining, that's a good sign. So, yeah.
Trying to avoid anything. I try not to see that stuff before the movie comes out.
Well, it doesn't reveal anything about plot at all whatsoever. Not even remotely. All
right, then I'll give it a look. Because I hate it when they do that and they spoil the movie or they like show the best scene of the movie. Like the horror films. Like, watch the first 10 minutes of Darkness Falls. And it's like the best part of the whole movie.
You're like, wow, you just saved me a rental. Thank you.
Well, I saw the movie based on that footage. And I'm like, wow, this is terrible. I really did see the best part at home for free.
Ouch. So, all right, Ethan, back to you, sir.
I guess I'll also pick something Up related, but Up is going to be the opening night film at Cannes this year.
Cool.
And it's the first film, animated film in history to do that, have that honor. So
that's great.
Cannes kind of becoming, I don't know, didn't they do Kung Fu Panda there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, they've always gone back and forth. I mean, like 1 year Willow was the opening movie. Moulin Rouge was the opening movie. I mean, they go back and forth between going like, oh, Americans, you only make crap, to being like, Kung Fu Panda at Cannes.
Well, they always have like out of competition movies there, right? They're like big studio. Like Indiana Jones was there last year.
That's right.
Oh.
Yeah, that was the opener, wasn't it, last year?
I think it was the opener, but it was definitely there.
Yeah.
Did you hear about the story about Indiana Jones being a child abuser?
No.
Yeah.
Does this have to do with Short Round?
No.
Yeah, that movie is kind of like Exhibit A in a court case for Short Round, isn't it?
Yeah. No, shoot. Who is the chick in Temple of Doom?
Kate Capshaw.
No, but the character's name.
Oh, I'm sorry. Willie Scott.
That was her name? Okay. Who was in the first one?
Marion Ravenwood.
That's who it was. Marion.
Yeah.
There's this scene where they're talking about, you know, their past relationship. She's like, you know, you knew it was wrong. And he's like, you knew what you were doing and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Apparently, she's 16 when they had their relationship, but originally George Lucas wanted her to be about 11.
What?
Yes, I will find the link. There's actually like transcription of the discussions that they had, and I'm like, dude, that's messed up.
This is legit?
This was Lucas saying this.
Oh my
gosh. Ew.
11 years old?
Hang on. I'm going to see if I can find this real quick.
What?
Okay, so I found this. It was posted on Cinematical, so... Who knows if it's true or not?
I hope it's not true.
That's just so disturbing.
I hope that is such crap. I really, really do. That's ridiculous.
It is, but it...
George Lucas is a dad. You know, it just seems very strange that he would say something like that.
But when you take the word, the script, you know, the transcription from Raiders of the Lost Ark, Marion, I've learned to hate you in the last 10 years. I never meant to hurt you. I was a child. I was in love. It was wrong and you knew it. You knew what you were doing. Yeah. Kind of disturbing.
I guess the term George Lucas raped my childhood has a new
I hope they debunk this rumor. I really do. I hope it's crap. I sincerely do. I'm sticking by that. I refuse to acknowledge that rumor.
Fair enough. Okay, sorry. I didn't mean to just completely destroy people during this episode, but apparently I just did. All right, what else have you got, Ethan?
Benjamin Button will be getting a Criterion.
That's incredibly cool.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is, isn't like the single disc getting put out by the studio put it out? Was that Paramount?
Yeah.
And then the two disc is getting put out by Criterion.
Hmm.
I think that's the first time we've seen this happen, isn't it?
As far as like a major release?
Yeah, where the single disc is put out by the studio and a deluxe edition put out by Criterion.
Well,
because Criterion put out Life Aquatic.
Yeah, yeah, Life Aquatic was one disc, and it still and has like the little disc. Yeah, yeah, and they still had like the little Criterion symbol on the side and everything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful film. It deserves a deluxe treatment. I think this could really help the movie kind of overcome some of the backlash it's gotten, because everybody's like, oh, it's a ripoff of Forrest Gump. It's too cheerful. It's sappy. It's cutesy. You know, I think people really praised this movie. It was a big hit. And then, you know, people were kind of like, it's like Forrest Gump. And they kind of turned their backs on it. I think this will help bring some more credibility to it.
I hope so. In completely different news, Brian Fuller, the man who is responsible for writing the best episode of Heroes regarded by a lot of people in the first season, created Dead Like Me, Pushing Daisies, Wonderfalls. He wants to make a new Star Trek series based in the same world that J.J. Abrams' movie is. Different crew, different cast, you know, different ship, but kind of bring back Star Trek. It's worth noting he got his start writing on Battlestar. What the? Deep Space Nine and Voyager. Cool. So, yeah, I don't know what that says for
Voyager.
Him. I hated Voyager, so. I don't know. Well, hopefully it won't suck.
It's interesting. Cool. Does Abrams know about this?
Yeah, he's been pitching it to Abrams' company and everything. Oh, cool. And, yeah, he's really pushing to try to get it going.
That's cool. Well, hey, it's great. Good.
Apparently he doesn't want to go back to Heroes, which who could blame him? All right, have you got anything else, Ethan?
Yeah, two last things. Dennis Quaid and Julianne Moore have been cast as Bill and Hillary Clinton in the Stephen Frears directed conclusion to the Tony Blair trilogy.
Wow. Now, what were the names again?
Dennis Quaid and Julianne Moore.
Dennis Quaid and Julianne Moore. Wow.
Quaid played Bush a few years ago in American Dreams. This is very interesting.
Huh.
Yeah.
Daryl Hammond. Like, what? Why not him?
Well, apparently, so this is not going to be a comedy then.
No, it's going to be like a super serious drama, I guess.
Interesting. Yeah, because Frears, other than like Hero, the Justin Hoffman Hero, he doesn't really do comedy. So I'm, yeah, interesting to see how this plays. I want to see who the cast is. Monica Lewinsky. That's who I really want to see. I pick Anne Hathaway. That's my pick.
Rosie O'Donnell. Sorry.
Ew.
You just killed all marketability of this movie, Dave.
I've required Mind Bleach twice in one episode, and I haven't done that in how long?
Mind Bleach, nice.
I'm kind of proud now. Okay, what's your last one, sir?
Okay, you guys see the Where the Wild Things Are poster?
Yeah.
That looks so cool.
Very promising, yeah.
And I hate to admit it, I haven't read the book. So I'll have to rectify that. Yes.
Yeah, you'll love it.
Yeah, I'm really starting to get excited for this movie again.
Well, it's Spike Jonze. I mean, but
I'd heard about the studio tampering with it, but then I read an interview with him where he said, no, they weren't. We just need more money and more time to finish the movie. Hmm. That's basically where all the confusion was coming from. But yeah, I think this is going to be something really special. And a trailer is going to be out next week, I hear. So.
Oh, wow. Very cool. Huh. Right on. I will look forward to seeing that. My last two bits of news, really neither one's really a bit of news at all. But first of all, over at FunnyEverDie.com, we had the Gobstopper trailer hit, which after, you know, John Hamm doing Lex Luthor, which that told me he should play Lex Luthor forever now. But this Gobstopper trailer, it was like Willy Wonka meets Hostel.
Yeah, with Christopher Lloyd as Willy Wonka. Yeah.
That was the beautiful finishing touch. That's what sold it for me, I think.
Yeah. Poor Lloyd. He's like, he's at the Christopher Walken phase where he kind of knows, like, he's very self-aware now. So, Yeah. But
Did you guys know this trivia bit that Christopher Lloyd was considered for the role of Hannibal Lecter?
No.
Wow.
No, I didn't know that. I know Gene Hackman was up for the role, but no, I didn't know it was, wow.
Interesting.
Okay. That would have been a very different film.
Yeah.
Run for it, Marty!
Yeah. Okay, and finally, Neil Gaiman showed up on the Colbert Report. And you know, it's not funny. It's not often that you find someone who's willing to go with Colbert and stay step for step with him, too.
Yeah, he really held his own.
Yeah. Did you see this, Ethan?
No, I didn't, unfortunately.
I will get you the link. It's
a good interview.
Yeah, they talk about the Graveyard Book, which is the Jungle Book ripoff. Not a ripoff. It's a reimagining.
Yes, yeah.
And anyone besides Neil Gaiman, I'd be mocking them, but he's so freaking talented.
Yeah, and it's the Newbery Award winner, which Colbert also jumped on. Really funny stuff.
Yeah, you're taking away American jobs. Yeah,
right.
All that stuff. Yeah. If it were all gonna die. Yeah. Oh, it is just so good all over. So well worth checking out. I might even embed that in the post. So anyhow, let's take a quick break, but then we shall be right back.
Another year, another convention season, and while geeks are out there hobnobbing and having a great time, you're still sitting at home watching reruns of Lost in Space. And I know what you're thinking. I can't get to every con. Isn't there someone that can help a brother out? Well, of course there is. Geek Radio Daily is going to be in Denver, Colorado for Starfest April 17th through the 19th. Check them out at starland.com. And for the first time ever, the GRD Street Crew will be streaming live video from the floor of a convention. Because it's the future, yo. You'll be able to see all the events as they happen simply by going to ustream.tv/geekradiodaily. Submit your questions because we'll be interviewing some of your favorite geeky celebrities like...
Insert celebrity voice here.
And...
That guy that's in that thing you like.
Plus...
That one girl you think so hot. Her too.
April 17th through the 19th, we'll be at Starfest and so can you. Stop by for more info at your daily stop for all your geeky goodness, geekradiodaily.com.
And I think did I mention last week that that Rocky Horror Show might be happening, might not?
At the Starfest. I believe you did.
Okay, I found out officially it's not happening, and I'm completely okay with that. I would rather not be sacrificed on live streaming internet.
Well, there's a lot of, the Continental Theater... That week, they're having screenings of Serenity and Star Trek Generations.
Yeah, but they're doing it on Wednesday nights. Mm. I'm not going to make that drive all the way back. But I'd like to. You know, I mean, it'd be fun. I wish they did it on Saturday still, but that's okay.
Yeah, Wednesday is kind of odd.
That's okay. We'll be doing live streaming from Casa Bonita and other such
Casa
fun
Bonita,
things.
Casa Bonita.
All right. What are we talking about this week, sir?
Talking about Preston Sturges' The Lady Eve, starring Henry Fonda and Barbara Stanwyck, one of the funniest romantic comedies I think I've ever seen. Marty bought me this DVD for Christmas for Julia and I. And yeah, he's right. It's a knockout movie. Henry Fonda is this snake wrangler, a joke that actually has lots of payoffs. They repeat it a number of times in different ways, and they manage to make it funny every time. He's a snake wrangler, extremely wealthy, and Barbara Stanwyck and her dad happen to know that Henry Fonda's character is on this boat, on this cruise ship, rather, and they basically verbally seduce him into their lives. And hilarity ensues.
You know, it's not often when you say hilarity ensues that it actually does.
Actually, yeah. This is really, really funny. The side characters in this are hysterically funny.
Mm-hmm.
There's all these elaborate slapstick sequences towards the end of the movie that get funnier and funnier and bigger and bigger.
They do. Now, this is your second entrance into the world of Sturges, Ethan. What do you think of this?
I quite enjoyed it.
All right, then.
I'm waiting for the discussion to kind of perk up before I make any points or so.
That's all right. You know, this is the second time I've seen this, and it said I own the Universal set. Universal Pictures put out a 7-disc Sturges set. I got it for Christmas. And I actually rented the Criterion Edition from Netflix. I didn't like it the first time I watched it. And I figured out why. Because, let's just say, in every romantic comedy, there's something that keeps the couple apart. And it's always resolved in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
This movie takes about half the movie to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of irked me the first time. But this time, I really recognized the charm that it brings to it. And I just really loved how they did that turn.
Yeah, and I love Henry Fonda in this movie. Very laid-back charm, which I thought really, really nailed the part. Because Stanwyck is working very hard here. You know, she's it's a very hard-working performance. She does great. Where Henry Fonda, it seems almost effortless what he does in this film.
Well, he comes across so well as very book smart, but doesn't have an ounce of common sense in his brain.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah. He strikes me in this movie as someone who really wears his heart on his sleeve.
Yeah.
So to speak.
He has like, no reason to be any different.
People and he's like after the Jungle Cruise or whatever, when he's in the jungle, he's just saying, I just want to tell you all I had a most splendid time with you. From that you can tell that he really is an emotional guy and such. Mm-hmm. And I think Fonda brings that out very well in his performance.
Yeah. And I loved all the supporting characters, like all the different people working in the house. I thought they all had like their little moments to shine.
Oh, his bodyguard was awesome.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
Yeah. Who plays him? Shoot. Let's cheat away.
Yes. Let's see. Where's the cast list?
Because he's in Sullivan's Travels as well.
Is it Muggsy?
Possibly.
Then it'll be William Demarest.
Okay. Can I take a look real quick?
Absolutely, yeah.
Because, that's what I love about, you know, we brought up the character players that he had last time. It seems like Sturgis has, like, this bank of players that he goes to to pull off whatever he needs to.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I really like the opening credits, the animated opening
credits. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it's kind of it was different from what you expect to see, you know, in any kind of movie from that time if that's not geared towards kids.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just very enjoyable. It's got this light and bouncy feel to it. But I thought the jokes, the laughs are really big and really hard. And
the whole thing where how many times did he have to change his tux?
Right.
That was priceless.
Yeah. It was just a great running gag. Running gags usually don't work in comedies at all. They're usually really bad and forced and strained. But in this movie, like I thought all of them, maybe the bit with the snakes and his outfit and the ensuing slapstick of the end party. Yeah, I thought it just kept getting funnier and funnier.
Yeah, I think this is a great example. I was listening to the commentary on Sullivan's Travels. And it's great. It's got Christopher Guest and several other people in it. Oh, wow. It's a great commentary from Criterion. Shocker. We're not whores for them. but he was talking about how you could really make a correlation between Preston Sturgis and Orson Welles. And that they really brought the film to their respective versions of film to a new high art. Even though they may have, you know, fallen off or disappeared from the public eye almost altogether. And I think that's very appropriate.
Yeah, and it's good to give credit where credit is due with these guys. Because, even though Preston Sturges isn't as talked about as Frank Capra, I think he's just as instrumental as shaping movie comedies that came afterwards. And his movies really set the standard for so many of these. I mean, you know, road comedies, you know, it's hard to think of a better road comedy than something like It Happened One Night or Sullivan's Travels. I mean, these guys really set the textbook example. And almost every other movie like it that has come afterwards in the next 40, 50, 60 years, still, most of them don't measure up.
It's a pale shadow. It really is. Exactly. I mean, you look at either of these movies made today and you wouldn't get the same movie. I don't care who makes it.
Yep.
Because I don't know why he had that level of control because he wrote and directed this thing.
Mm-hmm.
He had the control over the studio, essentially. I mean, he was able to do whatever he wanted to do, and you just wouldn't get that, especially for romantic comedy today. We have filmmakers who can do pretty much what they want. You have Gondry's. You have the Finchers of the world. But I can't see them making this kind of movie.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. These guys who
make... Although they couldn't, it's just not a choice that they would make.
Yeah. You know, they don't... A, they wouldn't have Final Cut, and B, I think it seems like most romantic comedy filmmakers are happy if the movie turns out like Fool's Gold. You know, they're not trying to rewrite the book. I think Nora Ephron was probably the last one who made great romantic comedies, like Sleepless in Seattle, you know, and When Harry Met Sally. I think that's like the last really great strain. And then, of course,
Something's got to give. It actually is a pretty decent...
Absolutely, yeah, with Nancy Myers. Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's a few great examples, and you're right. It's in the situation where the director and the writer are the same person and that there's a real fondness for it. But most of these jobs, like, and I think that's what it is, most of these directors, they see it as jobs when they have to do something like While You Were Sleeping. You know, it's a work assignment. It's not necessarily like a passion project.
Yeah. Did you have anything else to add at all, sir?
I was going to make a point, but it's coming back to me. So this came out during 1941, and Barry, you were talking last week about how Unfaithfully Yours came out after World War II how it was more successful because of it. Do you think that this movie reflects its time in a way? Or?
Hmm.
It's like it is a lot more lighthearted, but even I'm just saying, do you think it could have been darker or?
No, that's a very good question. I appreciate it. I'm just pondering on it.
In a way, it was a pretty dark film still because
it is, and it's got a very headstrong female lead, and I think that's one of the keys because most of the films in the 30s, unless you're Mae West, these women, you know, are walked all over. But Stanwyck's character is very strong. She's the strongest in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I think that's definitely a reflection of the times. I think that's definitely one of the things I would say. It's definitely a 40s movie because you're getting to that era where you have women like Barbara Stanwyck and Betty Davis and these
what's her name? Nora in the Thin Man movies.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, why can't I think of her name?
Oh, I'm brain farting. Oh,
that's ridiculous. Anyway, you've got these, you know, thank you, Myrna Loy. Not only are the actors strong, but the characters are strong too. The actresses, rather. So I think, for me, I would pinpoint that this film, you know, it's got a really strong female romantic comedy lead, whereas a lot of movies, with the exception of like some Capra films, you know, we're talking like, you know, Betty Boop types, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have the occasional difference in like, his Girl Friday or something mm-hmm. like that, but it's not the norm. I kind of think, you know, this is kind of taking a crap on a movie a lot of people like, but I think if you had this movie made today, you'd end up with Pretty Woman.
Yes.
And if you enjoy it, good for you, but it's nothing on this.
Which is interesting you mentioned that, because Julia Roberts recently said that she admits that Pretty Woman is a bad movie.
Ooh.
Huzzah.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I can't say I've been the biggest fan of Disney's, you know, tribute to prostitution, but... But I mean, and this is a very good point, because on one hand, you could say, whoa, that character she played is very strong. She's a prostitute. She's a prostitute who falls in love with her client after like 2 days.
The heart of gold.
Talk about the worst hooker ever. Where it's, you know, seriously, what a terrible character that is. And it's funny. She got an Oscar nomination for that. Go Hollywood. And yet, you know, Barbara Stanwyck's character, even though she's an opportunist, she has a heart and she is a good person. And she's just, you know, she's looking out for herself. She's a survivalist. She's not a manipulative.
You get the feeling in this movie that the previous marks, shall we say, that she's had have been, you know, lecherous old rich guys.
Yes.
You know, and she plays on that, so they've kind of got it coming.
Mm-hmm.
And she meets this guy who doesn't have a problem against anyone in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as someone who's had this, who's become so cynical and jaded, to have someone truly be like that, I could imagine you buy into the fact that caught her off guard and she falls for this guy.
Absolutely, because you know she's sexy, but she's also smart and intelligent. I think that's one of the qualities that most, even today, most actresses don't have that to play with. They usually play dumb characters. It's rare you get to see a smart character that's played by an actress, or rather a female character that's intelligent.
Absolutely, yes. So obviously, everyone needs to watch this movie. All these movies we're going to watch, at least one of us are going to love. So I'm sure there's some on our list coming up that we'll have some pretty spirited disagreements about, but that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, this is one of the good ones, and I'm so glad Marty told me to see it, because the joke is, honestly, for years, I've always confused this movie with All About Eve, with
Betty Davis.
Betty Davis. I almost said Bette Midler. Betty Davis, yeah. So
no, isn't that the 10 Faces of Eve?
Is it? I thought it was All About Eve.
Or I don't know. Maybe
I'm so confused.
There's so many Eve movies. This is the good one.
Yeah. So see Lady Eve. It's terrific. It's really good.
And this is put out, just like Unfaithful Years was, by the Criterion Collection.
Criterion. Yeah, number 103 in their collection. Yes,
so what
by them all.
Special features are on there?
The special features are a sparkling new digital transfer, which doesn't sound like much until you see what the original transfer looked like, which was a nightmare. Auto commentary by noted film scholar Marion Keane. Take their word. Video introduction by writer-director Peter Bogdanovich. I appreciate that, because Bogdanovich is one of our best American directors, and he certainly has great taste in classic movies. It's got a 1942 broadcast of the Lux Radio Theater adaptation performed by Barbara Stanwyck and Ray Milland. Wow. How cool would that be to listen to?
Yeah.
The Edith Head costume designs. This is Edith Head who inspired that character in The Incredibles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so her costume designs. Scrapbook of original publicity materials and production stills. The original trailer. English subtitles. And optical image quality.
Yeah, so it's...
Awesome.
Criterion, it's loaded to the gills.
Film,
I watched it on the Universal Edition, and it looked good as well. So there's a Preston Sturges collection. Sometimes you can catch it at Costco for like $30. And all the movies that we're talking about this month, actually, no, Unfaithful Years is not in that set, but that's a really solid set as well.
Just that's also Criterion, yeah.
Yeah. This, the Universal set has no extras at all whatsoever, but it has good movies. So next week we're tackling The Great McGinty, right?
Yes.
Which is another classic.
Sturges.
Yes. So we're looking forward to that. Send us your feedback. If you watch these movies, let us know what you think about them, too. So, but what's hitting theaters this week, sir?
Well, Monsters vs. Aliens, with the voices of Will Arnett, Reese Witherspoon, Stephen Colbert, in 3D. The Haunting in Connecticut, starring Virginia Madsen. This is the poster that has, like, the vomit that's floating into the air.
This is such a... I
give it a week.
Yeah.
And then the one we're really excited to see, let's be Ooh, honest.
Yes.
John Cena in 12 rounds. The action movie comeback, we hope, from Rennie Harlan. But not for John Cena. With he's John on a roll. Cena, after the Marine, you know, he's on a roll. He doesn't need a comeback.
He's riding high after the Marine.
Oh, seriously. Seriously. This looks so cool.
I'm so going to watch that this weekend. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Can't wait to see that.
Yeah, I'm half tempted to try to force Steph to watch the Marine.
Oh, yeah. I got Julie to watch The Marine. She loved it.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. We've got a lot to watch, so we'll see how that goes. So, really good stuff on theaters. What's hitting DVD next week?
DVD, you got last year's 7 Pounds with Will Smith. The movie...
Will Smith and the Jellyfish.
And the Jellyfish. Yeah. There you go. Speaks for itself. And then last year's Best Picture winner, Slumdog Millionaire.
And there are more DVDs. It's just my source, Amazon. Didn't have anything up, so... You're stuck with like 3 movies. Oh, sorry about that.
7 Pounds, Slumdog.
Just don't rent Slumdog because you won't get any special features.
Still rent it from Blockbuster.
Yeah. No. Rental copies, period. They're
really?
Yeah.
Period. So mean. It's like, you can rent it, but you cannot have any fun. It's so cool. Yeah. I mean, cruel. Cruel. Not nice.
Yes. Wow. Okay. Well, I guess that'll wrap it up for this week.
And on that note.
Yeah, on the giant crapping on Fox. Wow, there's a shock. You know, I'd love to support Fox. They just need to quit making silly decisions like this.
You know what's going to be... let me just end with this then. Did you guys read the Time Magazine article on 3D movies and specifically Avatar?
No. I did.
This thing is sounding so amazing, and it sounds like we're not even prepared for how this movie is going to be so awesome. If it lives up to everything they've saying, and Steven Spielberg's seen it, that Time Magazine reviewer saw a good portion of it, it sounds like Fox is probably going to have this year's top grossing movie, and it could even be next year's top grossing movie. It sounds like it's going to do just ridiculously well. It sounds amazing.
So it's not just him in making directorial poses?
Apparently, this is a digital 3D in which you feel like you're immersed in this world. You're going to feel like you're on the planet Pandora, this jungle alien planet. People have seen it. They say that it's so startling, that the effects look so real, that even though they know it's effects, they don't believe that they're actually effects. It's PG-13. It's opening the same date as Titanic. So it sounds like it's going to wipe the floor with the Christmas season, and it's probably going to play all the way to April. I mean, seriously, it sounds like Fox is going to make so much money on it. It's probably a good thing that they haven't shown any footage on this thing, because chances are this is all people are going to talk about once they get an idea of what this movie is, if it is indeed the second coming, like they say.
I think Fox is probably going to put more effort into marketing Alvin and the Chipmunks this Squeakquel, though, so...
Well, you know, not everybody...
I don't know, with Cameron, for how much he's done for them over the years.
It's true. I mean, he really got them out of a tight spot in the late 90s with some of the money they were losing. So, yeah, this...
Yeah, with Aliens, The Abyss, True Lies.
Exactly.
I mean, so they owe him.
And apparently this is, you know, plus it's going to eat up a lot of IMAX screens too. So, you know, that's going to boost the box office grosses right through the window. So
that's very true.
This is like the first movie I can think of that, honestly, I will go so far as to say I can imagine it making as much money as Titanic. Maybe not topping it, but definitely making $600 million if it's what they say it is.
So. Right on. Cool. All right. Well, if you want to shoot us any feedback, please do send us an email at podcast, Ethan, Josh, Barry, or Dave at screengeeks.com. And next week, we will be talking about Preston Sturges' The Great McGinty. But until then, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
See you.
Well, I better be going. For somewhere, there are wrongs to right. There are foes to fight. There are little chunks of carrot in your teeth.
I'd have that taken care of. It can lead to insanity.